and welcome again to A Mixed Bipolar Life, living with ultra rapid cycling mixed bipolar disorder.
Hey guys, today's a very, very special podcast because I have a guest podcaster. Her name is Kelly. Kelly, say hi.
Hi.
And Kelly also suffers from bipolar disorder. In a sec, she's going to tell you guys a little bit more about her symptoms. First, I wanted to go ahead and do my check-in since I do that every time. Check-in on where I'm feeling. So today's not a bad day. I'm real restless, though. I don't feel too depressed yet. I may cycle this evening as I have been doing. I've had some couple of really, really bad evenings this past week. I've been cycling every day. Still literally don't know what each day is going to bring. But I did get up early today, and I don't know why I'm waking up earlier. There's something that's changed, and I haven't quite figured it out yet, because usually I'm sleeping in more. Maybe I'm just not sleeping that well. I've had a lot of nightmares, so that could be it and why I'm just waking up earlier. But the point being about waking up earlier that I've made in the past is that sleep deprivation actually can improve mood, so that could be why I'm feeling better today. Okay, enough of that. Okay, Kelly, so why don't you start out and tell listeners what your diagnosis is, and then just kind of go from there, telling them what your life is like and has been like for however long. Just give us the story.
Okay, here's my story. My diagnosis is bipolar. Bipolar 1 specifically, but I do have rapid cycling features. And I also struggle with borderline personality disorder and generalized anxiety disorder. So, got a few things going on there.
Well, most of us do.
Exactly. We all have something or multiple things. But I was diagnosed when I was 26. Totally hated my diagnosis. Avoided it. Didn't want to admit it. You know, I convinced the doctor that I didn't have bipolar. That was my borderline talking, because we are very manipulative. And, or we can be very manipulative with borderline personality disorder. So I had him convinced that I didn't have bipolar. But to make a long story short,
well, I'm actually curious, though. Can you just tell us how you did that?
I just was like, you know, I'm not depressed, and I'm not, you know, crying under a table all day, and I'm not, you know, on the top of a building thinking I can fly. I mean, I was thinking the worst stigma of this disease.
Yeah.
And I wasn't thinking of all of the years that I spent in depression and in hypomania, because I simply didn't know about it. I was completely uneducated about mental illness. And I just tried to talk him out of it, because it was so scary to me to think that I could have bipolar disorder.
Yeah.
I didn't want to have bipolar disorder. And
Who does?
And throughout the years, I've learned to acknowledge it as the gift that it is. Because, you know, learning about bipolar and being in it has made me so much more empathetic towards people in general. I acknowledge and I appreciate how creative I am. You know, the hypomania can be a lot of fun. I enjoy hypomania. But, you know, I've just come to appreciate the gifts that it offers. In fact, I had a blog for a while, Bipolar Blessings. This was years ago. And it was really looking at, seriously, all the blessings that come with a bipolar diagnosis if we stop and really look at it.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it was really good. It was from a biblical perspective too. So every blog posting had a scripture to go with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is it still up?
I've taken it down.
Oh, I think you should put it back
up. I know. I have everything, and I took it down, because of the stigma around surrounding mental illness and bipolar, because I was job hunting.
Oh, you use your real name.
I use my real name on everything. I blog.
That's brave.
I blog online. I write with Bipolar Magazine. I blog with them. I'm a blogger for them. And if you Google my name, all of my bipolar stuff comes up, you know. So, you know, a few years ago, I took everything down because I was very, very open in that blog about different things that I had been through and different struggles that I had had with bipolar. But I learned to, my little son is walking by right now. You're supposed to be in your room, little boy. Okay, so we'll edit that out. But essentially, I've taken time to write a lot about my illness. And that's been very healing for me. It's been life-changing to write about it and to blog about it and to share.
And can you, because we're getting, you know, really good high-level description of your bipolar disorder, but can you be more specific with people? Like, for instance, when you were first diagnosed, what symptoms did you actually have?
Mm-hmm.
And what, you know, what is it like for you to have bipolar? What does that look like? Because, like, for me, you know, my podcast and my blog focuses on mixed bipolar disorder with rapid cycles. And of course, mixed means I have both up and down symptoms at the same time. but my audience has no idea what you go through. Sorry, I know I interrupted you, but I think it'd be really helpful for them to know what bipolar disorder looks like to you.
Yeah.
You know, first.
Absolutely. And it's changed throughout the years. You know, when I was younger, it looked like agitated depression. I did have manic and depressive cycles simultaneously or within the same day. So I was a rapid cycler from the time that I was young. I would just be really sad or really low, just kind of feeling like I wasn't doing anything or accomplishing anything or meeting my goals or things that other people had set out for me to do. And I wasn't living up to their expectations. Yet at the same time, I had delusions of grandiosity where I was just immensely talented. I am talented, but I was much more talented in my brain than...
Now, are you saying at the same time, are you saying that maybe you were mixed or you are mixed?
Yeah, I am mixed.
Oh, well, this is perfect.
It is perfect.
I didn't know that. For those of you that didn't hear my last podcast, Kelly and I are actually in a support group together. That's how we met. But I never knew that she was mixed. It's funny because I always introduce myself as someone who has bipolar 2 mixed, ultra rapid cycler. Good to know. Perfect for the podcast.
Yeah.
I picked the perfect person.
That's why I love your podcast. I completely relate to it. And I've gone through those episodes where, you know, at the same time, you're so depressive, you have suicidal ideations, yet I'm like, but I'm going to make $100,000 this year. I'm going to make $200,000 this year. It's like, you know, just kind of like one minute I hate myself and the next minute I love myself. And sometimes it occurs at the same time. It's very confusing, especially for a young girl.
It is very confusing.
Yeah. And, you know, I had those symptoms. What really brought my symptoms to light was dating somebody seriously and getting engaged to them and having them live with my symptomology. It wasn't my family members who were, you know, they were like, oh, that's just Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
It was an outsider coming in and saying, I think we have a problem here. It's like, oh, okay, maybe I should look at this. So when I started dating...
But you were functional.
I was functioning. I was definitely functioning. I did get sick a lot physically.
Okay.
And so, you know, mental illness can move into the body in a variety of ways. I took a semester off of college due to mononucleosis, but really I was going through intensely manic stages at that time. and got sick from staying up all night. Being promiscuous, you know, kissing every boy in college.
And so kissing I got all mono. The frogs to see, yes, if they turn into a prince.
Yeah, nobody turned into a prince. But it was interesting because I did have that where I was dating a lot and trying to find something to fill me. Mm-hmm. Because going back to the borderline, I had had a biological father that left me at a very young age. And feelings of abandonment have always been prevalent for me. Now, my mother remarried when I was 5 years old to an amazing man, and he just died last year. But he raised me as his own, and he raised my siblings as well. So he was just an amazing person. But there's a hole that sometimes can't be filled, yeah, when you have that primary parent having them leave you.
Yeah.
And I never knew him. And it was always just a big hole. Like, what had I done? Was I not good enough?
So unfortunately, what children think. It's, yeah, not logical as adults, but as children, we wonder what we did wrong.
We totally internalize. And we think, you know, was I not good enough? And it led to feelings of not being enough in my life over and over. And also looking to fill that hole with relationships, mm-hmm, especially relationships, right, with men. So you know, you kind of go from, you bounce from relationship to relationship trying to fill that empty space. And until you recognize it for what it is, nothing can fill it. Mm-hmm. Nothing can fill it. So, you know, I met my husband when I was 25. We dated for about a year. And he really could see that we struggled in our relationship. And I could see that. I was constantly agitated, yet depressed at the same time. That agitated depression, yeah, was showing up. And we started going to premarital counseling because I thought it was just stress from, you know, I had finished college. I had a very high pressure job that I was promoted into at a very young age. And we were both making a lot of money. I mean, hand over fist, you know, and but there was something just missing. It's like I had this great guy, but it wasn't good enough. And I was constantly going through the depressive stages of not being enough.
So what part, if you can even answer this, what part do you think in that insecurity of never feeling like you're good enough, mm-hmm, what part was the depression versus the psychological, right, from your experiences, sort of nature versus nurture?
That's a good question. You know, I think that it really came with the situation of being abandoned by a primary parent that started that thought of not being enough. And then the loss of that started to lead to behaviors where it was a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, and, you know, you look at depression and you look at bipolar and it's a chemical, you know, disorder, mm-hmm, too. And so I struggled with migraine headaches a lot when I was younger. I struggled with those feelings of worthlessness and those ups and downs that were, you know, the rapid cycling. And that would always, like, strengthen that idea that I had that I wasn't enough, because it was like, there's something wrong with me.
The depression reinforces.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, it was interesting because we started our marital counseling, my husband and I, when I was 25 and 26. And it was really that counselor that encouraged me to go see a psychiatrist. And she really thought a lot of me. I thought a lot of her. She enjoyed working with my husband and I. But she said, I think that there's something deeper at play here. And I think that you should talk to a psychiatrist. And basically, she was telling me, girl, there's something wrong with you. It's not just your husband. But you know, I went to that psychiatrist and he was the one that diagnosed me as bipolar.
That's actually very similar to my story. Mm-hmm. I was going to counseling with a boyfriend, mm-hmm. and the counselor suggested that I go see a psychiatrist.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. In my wildest dreams, I never would have guessed that she thought I was bipolar. I think she knew that I had problems with anxiety. You know, I went to the psychiatrist and was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And I believed it for a while until I was over-medicated.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing, the reason why I asked you that question was because after I was over-medicated, I decided I'm not bipolar. They don't know what they're talking about, mm-hmm. because of the medication. I went from functional to non-functional because I was, mm-hmm. over-medicated, mm-hmm. with mood stabilizers that basically turned me into a vegetable. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it really was that bad at some points. But I decided after that it was all psychological, that it was all nurture. Which, on one hand, was good because I did end up going to counseling, mm-hmm. Full-time, regularly, but unfortunately not until my, late 20s, mm-hmm. I'm going to say. Well, I guess that's not too late, but it just seems like it took forever to get to where I am here, yeah. And it did. I really focused first on my self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because when I first started working on my self-esteem, and I actually worked with a psychologist who did her thesis on this self-esteem program that she created, and it really worked. It was through hypnosis, and not what people think hypnosis is, not where she's like dangling, you know, pocket watch in front of me.
You're getting sleepy.
Yeah, but it was more like affirmations. Mm-hmm. And I did a workbook, so there was homework that focused on your positive qualities and things, mm-hmm. like that. But anyways, it actually did work. But the funny thing was, at the time, I thought that my self-esteem was lower than anyone else's. Mm-hmm. And then when I started working on my self-esteem, I started noticing others and their reactions, that they were also insecure. Mm-hmm. A lot of other people were insecure. So my whole point here is that I went many, many years without medication, but working on myself through counseling and building up my self-esteem, and believing that it was just that and not chemical, until finally I had to, you know, got to a point where I got so bad I had to accept the fact that it was chemical. And interestingly enough, my girlfriend from high school, one of my best friends in high school, at a reunion, she said, "Oh yeah, I noticed your cycling in high school."
Yeah.
And like you said, the family, you know, everyone thought that was normal, except for people outside of the family. A couple people had told my mom that they thought I was hyperactive. Hmm. Differently, I mean, I remember experiencing depression as a child, and I obviously cycled because, and maybe I was mixed too, because I had so much energy as, mm-hmm. a child. That's the one thing. Like, and definitely, even on a videotape, we have me like talking so fast, so rapid. But I remember feeling like I was born depressed as well. Mm-hmm. So that's somewhat similar to what you say, is like I had both the high and energy and the mood and the rapid speech, but it also had depression going, mm-hmm. on as well.
My family would always say that I was just extremely dramatic. And of course, I went into drama in high school. I mean, I did sports and things like that at the encouragement of my family, but my heart was in the arts. Hmm. And I think they hated the fact that I did drama, because they said that I used to take on the characters in my plays. And which I think is bunk. You know, I mean, no, that didn't happen. But they just saw me as being extremely dramatic, up and down and all over the place. Mm. It was early symptoms of bipolar.
Right, right.
But, you know, it's interesting, too, because your story, when you were medicated, they put you on a mood stabilizer that made you flat. My story is they put me on an antidepressant. So I became extremely manic.
Right.
And within a few years of marrying my husband, we started investing in real estate. We also inherited some real estate from his parents who had passed just 6 months before I met him. Wow. And we just love to spend. And unchecked, I've come to realize that that's part of my symptomology is unchecked spending.
Yeah.
And
For me, you don't feel the consequences or you don't recognize the consequences, right?
Yes. Well, it went along with that grandiosity of right. I'm rich. Ah. You know, I mean, we had beautiful homes and decorated to the nines and we were burning through cash. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to find yourself at the age of 30 as a millionaire isn't normal. You know, it's... Well,
it might be more normal where we live, but...
Well, that's true. That's true.
I'm but, just teasing.
But
but was absolutely, just, I get it, that.
We yeah. had all these resources at our disposal, and unfortunately, my husband was very soft-spoken. He kind of took a back seat to my decision-making, and my decision-making was not sane. Mm. And so we, you know, bought $1 million house that in the... depression that hit in like 2006 to 2008.
Yes.
We lost $500,000 in value in a few months' time down in Southern California. And we started to lose assets. It was at that time in those years that I decided to start a company that I had no business starting, poured $500,000 oh, wow. into that, and the company flopped.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was, but this is the danger of hypomania and mania, and this is why I have a bipolar 1 diagnosis. I have experienced significant losses due to my poor decision making, either in depression or mania. And what would happen is to correct that mania, I would start going through all the guilt of spending or losing all this mm-hmm. money, and then I would go into a huge depression. That could last, you know, 6 to 8 months. And so the cycle started because you notice as the years go on that your mania and your depression is very cyclical.
Right.
And I started seeing the patterns in my bipolar at that time.
So Kelly, one of the things I really like to do in my podcast is focus on symptomology mm-hmm. because, my goal for, I guess, a couple goals for starting this, and one was educating people about first what I go through. That was friends and family, and then it led to this podcast. It led to the blog that got bigger, and then the podcast where I want to educate people on what it's like to experience mixed bipolar disorder, and to help people either recognize it in themselves or recognize it in others. So can you share with us, you know, get into some more details about what your symptoms look like mm-hmm. and the kind of things, how you feel and the kind of things that you do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the things I had mentioned before is I was put on an antidepressant,
right,
which led to mania.
Which antidepressant? Remember?
Which? Lexapro?
Okay.
I think was one of the first ones that
so
I was on.
So serotonin and norepinephrine.
Mm-hmm. And so it was interesting because that is what was very instrumental with me in my spending sprees. Mm. Feeling like I had to have a bigger home. I had to, you know, people would take me more seriously. And, you know, I just had to have more and more. And, there was a lot of ego in it, but it was symptomology. It was wanting right. and spending and having it available to spend was very dangerous for me.
Now, how come the doctor, your psychiatrist, wasn't recognizing that the antidepressant made you hypomanic?
Well, you know, one of the things with people who are hypomanic, I find, is that they can be very charismatic, very charming, mm-hmm. very convincing.
And very confident.
Very confident. And this is one of the...
Nothing's wrong.
Yeah. This is one of the traits that I exhibited. And so people... I had had a lot of successes in my career. I had worked for a global hospitality company and grown my career with them and was one of the youngest directors of sales and marketing that had ever been hired for this global company. And so I was kind of like this, you know, young prodigy. And I was very talented. I was very good at what I did, but... You know, with the mania, when I took it a step further and was like, oh, well, I'm going to quit this great job and I'm going to start my own company.
Mm, right. Yeah.
Because, you know, those feelings of grandiosity mm-hmm. and that I was like brilliant and I had all these, you know, flight of ideas.
And so much confidence that everything's going to work out fine.
Everything was going to work out fine.
No consequences.
And we put all of our retirement money on the line And I was just very convincing. And I convinced my husband that this was a good idea, convinced my family that it was a good idea, convinced myself that it was a good idea. And, and I just leapt. I leapt off this huge mountain with no supports. And, ultimately, we did lose everything. And
sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was sad. It was sad. And interestingly enough, you know, I'm happier now. Having less, it's stressful, but I have to constantly be checking my spending.
So Kelly, I'm really interested in hearing more about when you said that you've become a better person, mm-hmm. even with less. Mm-hmm. For me, that's also a really important point, and I don't know if how much... I've talked about it, so it makes me think I should talk about it more, maybe in my next podcast. But I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, well, you know, when you have less, you start to be a lot more creative and a lot more resourceful and a lot more careful. And before, when I had a bottomless, you know, bank account, it seemed, you know, everything I wanted I could have. And there's a lot of character building when you don't get what you want. You know, a lot of character building mm-hmm. happens there. And for the few years that followed 2008, we just sustained so many losses. Our marriage was strained. We had to start living more frugally. And because that bank account had dwindled. And but I think one of the most devastating things was the loss of our marriage and the stress that came along with it. We didn't make it. And one of the things is my husband chose not to be with me because the bipolar was too much. It was too much for him.
You weren't medicated at this time?
No, I was on antidepressants.
You were on the antidepressants.
Which made me more manic and agitated.
Mm, yeah.
Because those mixed features, right. It came out as agitated depression. So I was always frustrated with him. Spoke down to him. Was very condescending. And
let's mention also that irritability that also can come with hypomania or mania.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And... And that thing in me that was like, I'm better than you.
Mm.
And those were feelings of grandiosity. And what I started working on as our marriage started to unravel was really myself and how I was speaking to other people around me, how I was viewing the world around me. And I started doing some transformational therapy. And it was... really valuable in that I started to deal with the borderline and I started to deal with those feelings of loss and that feeling of having to have something to fill that hole. And so working on that borderline symptomology was really key. And then having those up and down cycles being so dramatic I started to really see that I had a need for a different kind of medication. And that's when I learned that I was really manic, primarily. Mm-hmm. And a doctor that I went to at this time explained to me that I needed to be on a mood stabilizer, something to kind of cap the high, mm-hmm. and to keep me from going too low.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, good doctor, very good doctor, and that was the first time that a mood stabilizer had been recommended to me.
And when was that?
This is in 2010.
So not too long ago.
The challenge was, is I was in the middle of a separation, lost my insurance, and
that was before. I was in the same place
before Obamacare. I couldn't get covered. I couldn't get covered because of pre-existing conditions. Sadly. So I was without insurance and without medication then, and that's when things got really bad. That's when things
you couldn't
got
afford
really
to pay
bad.
Out of pocket.
No. The losses were just too significant. I mean, I didn't have two nickels to rub together. I was, mm-hmm. you know, after a while I was on public assistance, mm-hmm. After my divorce, but, not having insurance and also thinking that I could handle it homeopathically mm-hmm. was something that sadly my body did not agree with.
I tried that as well.
Yeah. I think a lot of us try that, you know, because it's hard to be on all that medication. It really is. There's side effects to your medication that you want to avoid. And so I tried going about it homeopathically, and in 2013 I was hospitalized. And
for which?
For extreme depression with suicidal ideations. And this was to the point where I couldn't stop crying all day long. I was isolating. I was in my house alone. I wasn't seeing friends.
It sounds like what I do most of the time, Kelly, and I haven't been hospitalized, but which actually is kind of related. I wanted to just throw in there the reason why I think counseling is so important is mm-hmm. to work on all those psychological things mm-hmm. so that we have a stronger core and that we can recognize the mental illness, mm-hmm. The chemical parts, mm-hmm. Better. Mm-hmm. I mean that, you know, that's something, like I was saying, that's what I did and kind of ended up helping me realize more about the chemical mood swings. And that it was, especially, you know, when you have those rapid, the ultra rapid ones, you know, mm-hmm. I don't have them too often where I'm on rare occasions with medication changes where I'm literally changing my mood like every half an hour or something like mm-hmm. that, you know, mm-hmm. where you think that, am I crazy? Am I imagining this? And I've learned that but I couldn't have gotten to the no part if I hadn't learned to focus on learning how to tap into what am I feeling now? Mm-hmm. Like, not just the chemical feelings, but do I have a reason to be feeling mm-hmm. sad right now? You mm-hmm. know, does something trigger it? And understanding, no, I'm not imagining it. This is, you know, I am, my feelings are going up and down. And, having that strong core and knowing who you are, mm-hmm. You know, really, really helps a lot. So I'm just bringing that up to help other, you know, so and not first acknowledging what you're saying, and then also hoping, you know, to encourage other people who are listening to this podcast to go to counseling mm-hmm. because everyone has issues. We all have issues.
Yeah.
But if you have strong personality issues, self-esteem issues, and then you add a mental illness on top of that, it just...
It's like fuel to the fire.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, it doubles the symptoms, but it does. It just, that's a really good analogy, fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
It just kind of makes everything worse.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting too, because when I became aware in 2010 of borderline and was diagnosed with borderline in addition to bipolar, so much was made clear. so much. It was like, it was this aha moment of like, everything made sense.
Right.
And it was through intensive counseling, intensive programs that I, you know, wellness programs that I was a part of and I went through, and I realized that things were not my fault. My illness was not my fault, because I always thought that I had control of bipolar. Like, I somehow thought that I should be able to manage it. I should be able to think myself out of it. Right. And realizing that it was a chemical condition, you know, I forgave myself for a lot of it.
And I just want to point out that that is, I think, one of the most important things for those of us who suffer, whether it's from a mental illness or psychological symptoms, is to forgive yourself. That's huge.
Exactly.
Life-changing.
It was life-changing. And, you know, I went through so many different, you know, treatment programs and ways to heal. And, I mean, I became a marijuana addict for 12 years of my life, you know, dealing with the headaches and the mood changes, and it would make me feel better, but then I would have psychotic features from smoking too much, you know, and that became, it would exacerbate it. So I would try marijuana. I would try different
medications.
That
was with the antidepressant or not? Okay.
And then I went holistically, and then I got really into Reiki, and, but then I started thinking that, you know, talk about ideations. I mean, I was like thinking that I was like this great healer and I could like place my hands upon people and they would magically be healed and I could heal myself. And I used to, I mean, a lot of this was under the influence of marijuana too.
Interesting.
But I went through so many different therapies in the years of like 2010 to 2016. And tried a lot of different things. And I was open to a lot of things. I finally got covered after my, covered with insurance after Obamacare came out. And I was hospitalized in 2013 with intense depression. And that was the first time I had ever been put on a mood stabilizer. And it was Abilify. And that is when everything fell into place for me. It really was.
So this is kind of off, a little off topic, but regarding medication, you're the second friend who the first mood stabilizer they were put on was Abilify. And, but you had good insurance then? Was it good health insurance?
The first time I got on Abilify, I was put on Medi-Cal.
Okay. See, because my doctor hasn't prescribed Abilify to me. Taking Seroquel. And my girlfriend's on Abilify. She had great experience with that. And I'm like, why don't they not prescribe Abilify for me? And so I decided that it was because I'm on Medi-Cal and it's too expensive. So that's why I asked about that.
Well, now I get the generic format of Abilify.
Oh, they have a generic.
Yeah, okay. They have a generic. And originally, when they first put me on it, I couldn't afford it, and it wasn't covered in the formulary, but the company that manufactures Abilify gave it to me free of charge.
Right, yeah, through a program,
and that was a godsend. That was an absolute godsend. And I had never experienced being on a mood stabilizer. And so what originally happened was I had a very flat effect.
Too high, maybe, or?
Low.
Like no, I mean the meds, was the medication was too high?
No, I think I just started experiencing a new normal. I wasn't bouncing off the walls. I wasn't having these rapid thoughts, you know, these flight of ideas.
You were stable?
I was stable.
Yep. I know. Isn't that a trip,
it
right?
It was a little boring for a while because I had been a drama junkie.
Okay.
I mean, especially after my divorce, being single again. Trying to find my way.
Yeah.
I realized how much I was addicted to drama, you know?
Yeah.
The ups and the downs and the feelings and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, when I started having less feelings, it was really challenging for me. But, you know, on a negative note, I've gained significant amount of weight on my medication.
Yeah, thank you, mood stabilizers, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've gained over 100 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I don't want to raise mine. Mm-hmm. But just to stay in my clothes, I have to walk regularly.
Yeah.
I have to exercise regularly.
Yeah. To me, it's all about my diet. I found out a few years ago that I had a lot of food allergies. Mm. And when I stopped eating the foods that I was allergic to, I lost 90 pounds.
Wow.
Because I've always been a little heavier. Lost 90 pounds, and then I gained it back over the course of a few years because I crave carbs like mad.
You know, I think that's the medication, because I do too.
Yeah.
Or the other thing I discovered for me is that the mood stabilizer gave me hypothyroidism, or made my thyroid worse. I think I had a little bit of hypothyroidism that, and I can't think of what they call it, but it doesn't show up on the THS subclinical.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mood stabilizer, but my T3 was negative, or okay, abnormal. It was low. And then after going on the mood stabilizer, I became officially, you know, low or high THS and hypothyroid. THC. No, THC is what's in marijuana.
That's in marijuana. See, I'm on the marijuana still. I miss it. Wait, I was thinking, I forget what all the different things are, but I was also diagnosed.
T3, T4. And TSH.
Yeah, I was diagnosed with hypothyroidism when I was 19.
See, there is...
there's a tie.
There's a correlation, mm-hmm, between bipolar disorder and thyroid, because, mm-hmm, especially people on lithium, and I've said this before in my podcast, I don't like lithium. I think it's a dangerous drug. I know it's helped a lot of people, but also people that have been that are on lithium long term. One of my friends got thyroid cancer.
Oh.
Another one got Parkinsonism.
Oh, wow.
The symptoms of Parkinson's. Well, just like Robin Williams.
Yeah.
You know, he was bipolar. I don't know if he was on lithium, but I'm guessing he probably was, because he ended up with Parkinson's, they said. But I think it was because of, again, the lithium. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you look in the side effects of lithium, you can get those symptoms. But anyways, mm-hmm, that's sort of getting off track a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, symptomology is so tough. I've gone through so many symptoms: extreme shaking, dizziness, migraines, weight gain. But, you know, my mom always jokes with me and she says, I would rather have a chubby Kelly that's happy in here than no Kelly.
That's nice.
And so, you know, I've gotten a lot of support from my family, and it's true. It's, you know, I've come to be in this new normal phase. I still cycle, and I still experience ups and downs.
Yeah.
I'm able to manage it better because I'm 43 now, and I'm able to see it for what it is. I'm able to kind of put it aside and say, okay, this is what's happening with my body. And
some mindfulness there.
Yeah, tons of mindfulness therapy and stuff like that has it's been very influential with how I see my illness now.
Great. So Kelly, I know that both of us are pretty involved now in groups and outreach, mm-hmm, regarding mental illness. You had a blog, which I would love you to put it up again. And you know what? I don't use my real name for my blog. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm, if that encourages you to put it back up, I would ask you to put it back up because I'd love to read it.
It's now a book.
Oh, well,
I'll give you a copy of the book.
Awesome. Even better. I know for myself, one of the things I recently got involved in is NAMI's... National
Alliance on Mental Illness.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I always forget the A. National Alliance on Mental Illness. A lot of great program support there. I recently got trained, well, somewhat recently, several months ago, but on NAMI has a program called In Your Own Voice, where we go and speak to people that are in mental health hospitals, people, you know, in the hospital, currently hospitalized. And we just basically tell them our story and to help give them encouragement and realize that they're not alone. Although I've only done two of them because I've been too depressed to go regularly.
Aww.
And I've kind of stopped doing it. But I now would like to, I'd like to go and talk to like grad students and, and clinics about both my sleep disorder and what it's like to be mixed bipolar disorder, because both of those are not diagnosed enough. But anyways, enough about me. I know you're super involved, so we know that you've blogged for Bipolar Hope and as well, and then you're involved with NAMI too, right?
Yeah, I serve on the board of the local affiliate. And I also have been trained in Our Own Voice, I think you know. And that was fundamental in sharing my truth and letting people know that they're not alone. Their symptoms, you know, people have, you know, danced on tabletops in Mexico before. They will in the future. You're not alone in that.
Hey, I like to do that even if I'm not hypomanic.
It's a good healthy thing to do. But you know, when you share your story, the power of it lessens, the power that it has over you lessens, and you realize how similar we all are and how we've all experienced similar things.
And it's really good for people who are hospitalized, and especially those that have been, you know, maybe it's their first time or second, you know, just early hospitalizations or new to medication, haven't dealt with the stigma fully yet, which unfortunately there's still, you know, it's getting better. But there still is a lot of stigma. Like we were both discussing how, well, for instance, for you, you don't want to put your blog up because you use your name, and you know, if you're looking for work, people could search on that. For me, I was just talking to another friend that has bipolar disorder. He's bipolar one, and he tends to be on the hypomanic side more than anything. And I'm always like, gosh, I wish I was like, I had that. I want that. I know, he's so lucky. Like I am dealing with depression too much. But he and I often talk about how we would love to come out of, you know, so to speak, on Facebook and share, you know, hey, this is what I have and this is what I go through. But we know that related to work, no one would want to hire us.
It's a very real problem. I mean, I go through long periods of unemployment where I have to do consulting because I think that, well, I know when you Google my name, all of my history with bipolar comes up. I mean, my blogs, you know, my websites that I've had, the coaching that I've done in the past surrounding mental health, it's all out there. And it's can be very scary for an employer. But I continue to check that box that I have a disability on my applications. I continue to do In Our Own Voice. I continue to serve on the board. I continue to fight the stigma to show that people who are very ill can also achieve great things.
That's a really good point. And as a matter of fact, I'd like to take it to a notch higher than that and say that people with bipolar disorder are super smart and super creative.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot to do with that, being in that hypomanic state or manic state where the brain, you know, it's like your brain on 10 Red Bulls. I don't know, but you know, there's a, you know, definitely a connection. And even a book, Brain on Fire, right? Written about that.
You know, it's a gift. It's a gift if you are able to harness it with medication, with therapy, with giving back and looking out of yourself and, you know, giving back, which is why I think things like this podcast is so important, so that people can recognize it's not a diagnosis of failure. You don't have to lose because you're bipolar. You don't have to experience a life of having less. You can achieve so much because we are gifted with so many talents and creativity and empathy, ultimately, when you come to a point of health.
Yeah. One of the things that I've been wanting to say to you, acknowledge, is I remember the first time I went to our support group, and you know, we go around and we tell people what our diagnosis is, and I remember you saying bipolar, of course, but also borderline personality disorder. And even now I was like still really surprised, because you so do not give off, I would say now I don't see that. I mean, maybe you can see if you still have symptoms left, but you do not radiate that personality disorder to me. So obviously you've made great strides in that.
Thank God for therapy.
Yeah, thank exactly. Myself, I'm pretty sure I was borderline and a little narcissistic, you know, definitely the borderline. And I didn't realize that until recently, you know. It was like, I think I had some of that then, but through counseling, 20 years of counseling, you know, it's, I'm just so happy to be the person I am now. But in hearing you talk, you know, that big hole, you know, I just was relating, definitely relating to some of those symptoms. So I just want to say, great job.
And thank you.
Amazing. And honestly, I don't even think that diagnosis fits you anymore.
Yeah, I consider myself to be in remission, you know.
Or recovered.
Borderline.
How about recovered?
Well, I say remission because I do have flare-ups. but it's been few and far between, especially in the last, you know, with the borderline in the last several years. The therapy has helped. Personal responsibility, accepting responsibility, being responsible for my actions, that's been instrumental.
Yeah, if I only could have certain family members do that too.
Yeah, if only we could save the world.
So Kelly, I just want to mention one more thing before we wrap up, and that was sort of on the creativity and ending on a positive note, and how we can make our lives better and not be, see it as a gift instead of a limitation. For me, that's been really important now because, you know, my disability has just gotten a lot worse, and the depression's gotten worse as I've gotten older. But I've been hanging, what I'm holding on to is, not only a book I had started, but another book I finished that I want to rewrite. But lately, because I did get into film a while back, is a screenplay that I am planning to write. And, you know, that's part of that bipolar creativity. We're always wanting to create, produce. And it's the one thing that's really keeping, you know, through my difficulties right now, and the depression and the financial stress and other stresses, you know, holding on to that, knowing that it's a good idea and I can do it, but also being realistic, you know, not being hypomanic, dealing more with depression, but not being hypomanic. And the other thing I was remembering just right now was when you were talking about gosh, and I just forgot it again. Oh my gosh.
It's the medication. It's med brain.
I see it's a combination of drugs and sleep deprivation. I think it's mostly sleep deprivation I'm having right now. Cause I woke up earlier than I usually do. And I hate that. Those thoughts that just get, they're good thoughts.
And then they disappear in the cloud.
Into the cloud. So So I'm just going to stop there, and I'm going to say thank you so much for joining me in this podcast. It's been so awesome having you. Your stories are great. You've had so much to share, and I'm sure everyone listening feels the same way. And good luck with everything and, you know, coming your way in the future. And remember those gifts.
Thank you. And thank you for doing this podcast. It's so important.
You bet. Thank you. All right.
Lastly, I just want to first thank you guys for all your support. I so appreciate all the great reviews and comments that you've already left. And please ask that you can continue them. The reason why I do this is to help people. And when I get your feedback through your great reviews or comments, and sharing, then I feel like that this is worth it. And it helps encourage me to go on and especially to keep doing this. So please, I would appreciate if you could take the time to leave me feedback. Obviously, positive feedback preferred. That would just be wonderful. And that allows me to move higher up in these podcast apps to reach more people. And that's the goal. That's what I want to do, is to help you and your loved ones. I also want to remind you that I have a blog, that's bipolarmixed.wordpress.com. So it's the disordered first, bipolar, then mixed, M-I-X-E-D. .wordpress.com. Lastly, I have to thank my friend Jill Moran for her wonderful music in the beginning and the end. She is a composer, and she recently started out doing composing for film and podcasts and everything else you can think of. She did an original score for me. She can do music for you, and she is very reasonable and moving up quickly. You can reach her on Twitter at jillmimo.com. That's J as in Jill, I-L-L, M as in Mary, I as in India, M as in Mary, O, Jill at jillmimo on twitter.com. Okay, thanks, guys. God bless you. I wish you well. Hang in there, and I will see you next, or talk to you next time.